awful. My mother started to cry because she knew that wouldn't bring enough to buy the necessary things for the house, such as sugar and a few things you needed for the kitchen, plus a few yards of yard goods to make dresses for my sisters. My mother was quite a seamstress. She used to sew for a lot of the neighbors and friends.
Did you children make the butter, or was that your mother's job?
No, we had a churn like a barrel, and we turned that. The cream would just slop around there a while, and then finally turn to butter. It didn't take very long, but my brother was always impatient, and he took the cover off to look to see if it was turning to butter, and it he didn't get the cover back on right. So the first turn he gave the churn, the whole works came out on the gravel, so there was all the butter gone. And then he ran in the field to get away from it, and my mother just ordered him back and gave him a good pounding.
Quite a little rascal for a brother you had,
huh?
Yeah,
yeah.
Did he get into lots of trouble?
At that time we wore long stockings above our knees, knitted stockings, and my mother used to knit those stockings for all of us.
Short pants then? Or?
And short pants. So, my brother was, the knees were always worn out of his stockings, so she'd rip it down to past the tear and then put on, knit new tops.
Did you have your own sheep for wool, or where did you get the
yarn? No, we didn't. That's one thing we didn't.
Did you have to buy the yarn then?
The Belgians didn't do that. However, when I got to Denmark in 1909, a girl there, she was just a young Danish girl, and she spun the yarn, the wool into yarn, and then made a pair of mittens, and she left them white. She didn't even dye them, and she was a clerk at the store where I was bookkeeper. Tina Jurgensen, her name was. And she used to kid me. I used to drive out over 7 miles to visit my girlfriend. And she used to kid me in the wintertime, asking me if it was cold driving out there. And this one Christmas, she gave me this pair of white knit mittens that she had spun the yarn and knitted the mittens herself. So see, the Danes used to do those things.
Yeah.
The Danes are nice people. I like them. They when they come into the store, they wouldn't talk like we Americans. You know, we Americans go in the store and we say, "Oh, give me a pound of lump sugar." Give me. We'd always say, "Give me." You see, we still do. But the Danes would say, "Jaskaha ein fund stump sugar." That means, "I shall have 1 pound of stump sugar."
Oh.
I shall have. See, where we demand it, we say, "Give me."
Well, that's a nice observation about them. So the Belgians and the other nationalities up there, like the Danes, get along real well?
Well, there wasn't any Belgians in Denmark. I guess I was the third one there. Now there's quite a few. They get all over, you know. They have families.
Yeah. Could you tell me about the wooden shoes that were worn for working on the farm?
Yeah, sure. My dad wore wooden shoes. I never did, but my dad and mother did. That's for farm work. Then they'd take them off at the door, bring them inside the door, and take them in, take the shoes off all the time. They're always walking around in stocking feet. Of course, stocking feet them days was good wool stockings, good wool knit stockings.
Yeah. Were there any fancier shoes for the women when they went out? Or
yeah, they used to paint them black. Well, I don't know that. No, my folks never wore wooden shoes to go out.
Oh.
They had leather shoes then. Of course, again, they were funny shoes, according to our way of thinking. The men's shoes had an elastic on each side of the shoe. About two 2.5 inch wide elastic, and no lace.
Oh, so it just
and stretched. So they had a loop on the front and a loop on the back to pull them on.
Huh. And were those made by someone that lived
nearby?
No, they
were factory made already, but that time, I don't remember the times when shoemakers would make the shoes themselves. Yeah. That used to be a trade 2 years ago. I don't remember that, but I know of it.
Yeah, what about the wooden shoemakers? Those were made in the area, weren't they?
I don't know who made those. I really don't know if they're made in the area or where they were made.
Hmm. Do you remember about what the price of wooden shoes was, or didn't
no,
your parents ever tell you?
No, I don't.
Oh, could you tell me the story that you told me once before about keeping warm on the wagon box when you went to visit?
Oh, well, when we went to visit our grandmas, we had to visit one on Christmas and visit the next one on New Year's. And it is always a drive of Grandma Brance's, 2 or 3 miles, and Grandma Knowles was about 5 or 6 miles. So my dad would pack us all in the wagon box. He'd pile a lot of hay in there and put in a jug with hot water or some stones that they had heated in the oven, and put them in the wagon box, and then cover us up with the horse blankets.
Oh.
I always hated the smell of a horse on the blankets.
And did those stones then keep your feet real warm?
Oh, sure, it kept it warm under the blankets, you know.
Yeah. Huh. That was real clever.
Same thing when my dad used to cross the bay with a big load of hay from Little Sturgeon to Menominee, Michigan. When he'd get home, my mother would take, she'd have a big pan full of oats that she would heat in the oven. Then she'd fill those felt shoes with that hot oats to dry them, to keep them.
Huh. You mentioned before that sometimes in the winter when your feet got real cold, you got something called chilblains.
Oh, yeah.
What's that?
It wouldn't allow us, the folks wouldn't allow us to put our feet in the oven. We'd want to put our feet in the oven.
Yeah.
But chilblains, it's kind of, it hurts.
Is that when your feet warm up too fast?
I don't know what causes it, but there was a lot of things them days that they don't have now.
Yeah.
Dyspepsia, you never hear of that anymore. That's what my grandfather died of.
What is it like?
Dyspepsia, I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, could you explain the beer-making process that went on your farm?
Oh, well, it's... You had to have a vat. So you'd build two foundations, one on each side, and put the vat on that, about 2 feet deep. Then you'd have a couple of horses, and you'd have a cedar tub, because cedar, I guess, doesn't have much pitch. They had a lot of cedar around there. That's a light wood.
Mm.
And you'd keep taking that boiling water, put it up and dip it up in that tub, and then it would run through a sieve like. But they had put the hops and the barley in the tub. They'd throw the hot water over the barley and the hops.
In the cedar tub?
In the tub, yeah.
Yeah.
A big tub about 5-6 feet in diameter.
Hmm. And how long did the process take to get finished beer?
I don't know. I know they were at it all day long. And at that time, well, the Belgians are great beer drinkers. Every Monday you go by Rubens' store and tavern where we hauled our milk, and there'd be 12, 15 empty half barrels of beer there.
Mm.
They were empty, all lined up on the front for the beer man to pick up when he'd deliver beer again. But you could always borrow those. The breweries would let the farmers borrow those barrels to put their beer in.
Yeah.
Of course, when we got through with it in the fall, well, then we'd bring them back, the Rubens again.
Hmm.
See, they were freshly rosined, you know, a beer barrel is rosined inside.
Is that, what's that for? Why is it rosined?
I don't know. That's to the barrels were made of oak at that time. Now they're made of aluminum. I don't know now whether they're rosin aluminum or not, but they did rosin oak. We had a big Cooper factory here, Britain's.
Did you sell any of the beer that your family made?
No. That was consumed during haying season and then harvesting grain. I being the oldest one, I had to have I think it was pretty near a 2-quart pitcher. When I'd see my folks coming into the barn with a load of hay or a load of grain, I'd have to have a pitcher of beer there for them to drink, so they wouldn't lose time and come into the house.
Yeah.
And then when they got through unloading that load into the barn, I'd have to have another pitcher.
Wow.
And I went on all day long.
So did they mostly drink beer in the harvest season? Did they drink it at the holiday times, like at Christmas or New Year's?
I don't remember then that they... Oh, I guess they had some left over. They wanted to get those barrels back to the brewery, you know, to the...
Could you tell me about the shingle making process?
I was staying there to go to school. My first year of school, I stayed with my grandfather and grandmother Brandt's, and I saw my grandfather Brandt's shave shingles. They would cut the cedar logs in proper lengths for shingles, and then with a broad axe they would split that. But then they would hew with a draw knife. They would clamp it in what they called a horse, clamp it down, and with a draw knife they'd shave it down to a point.
Then did they sell this to communities?
No, I think my grandfather only made those for his barn. But they were on that old barn. The shingles were on there 70 years. When they tore down the barn, the shingles were still in pretty good shape. See, they were cut with the grain. Where when you make shingles on a shingle machine, on a shingle saw, they're cut cross grain. And the water gets in there then, you see, and soaks them and rots them quicker. No, they were better made shingles. A lot of people used to make those shingles and sell them. They had to haul them to the bay, which was quite a distance.
Wow. How much do you think they got paid for that?
That I don't know.
Do you think there are any barns standing yet that still have the old-time shingles on them?
I don't know that, but there might be. There might be, because there's a few log houses, log barns around there yet.
Huh.
Ours, of course, the people that bought our farm, the buildings were all on the 140. So our house was moved twice, and I think it's at Dykesville now. But of course, it was a brick veneer, and the brick are all off from it. But I can still see those oval windows at Dykesville.
Yeah. Where would the barns be that might still have some of these shingles on them?
Oh, there's quite a few log barns around the Rose area that might still have those hand-hewed shingles.
You should go look for them. Do that. Could you explain?
I know the fellow that bought our farm. I don't know what our grain barn was bought by Trembles. And the picture of it was in the paper the other day.
Oh, which paper was that?
Press Gazette.
Huh.
And they moved it, I'd say 3 miles.
Must have been a big, sturdy barn,
but they moved it 3 miles away. I don't know what happened to the granary. And the log barn, I don't know what happened to it. But the man that bought that 40 with the buildings on still has a lot of log barns. That's west of the Catholic Church in Rosaire. There is also a nice log house about a mile east of the church that belonged to Gus Kinnard. K-I-N-N-A-R-D.
Could you explain how these buildings were laid out on your farmland, the buildings that you've been telling me about?
Sure.
I've got... I've, I just wanted you to explain it for on the tape. I've got the diagram, but I wanted you to kind of explain how it was in kind of a...
Well, kind of a square. The house was on the northeast corner. And then the orchard was west of the house. And then beginning at the end of the orchard was the log barn running east and west. And then, forming a triangle, the frame barn ran north and south. Then, a few feet away was the chicken coop to the south. And then to the east was the granary. And then to the east of the granary was the summer kitchen.
Wow. And the summer kitchen wasn't attached to the house?
No.
When did you use that, and why did you? Why was it
separate? Well, in the summertime, because you had a hot wood stove, you know, and they'd get awful hot and heat the house up.
Mm. So you'd carry your food over to the summer kitchen?
Right. Well, they had some food out there.
Huh. Yeah, that was pretty clever. Could you tell me the use of most of these buildings?
Well, the log barn, of course, there was an archway in between, so you could unload hay above the barns. It was an archway. The first section was for four horses, then the archway, and then the other was for, I don't know, 10 or 11 cows, I guess that's all they had then. They didn't go so much for dairying. Now this country is dairying. They feed everything into the cows now for milk. Them days, you didn't get much for milk, only 40 cents a hundred, so it didn't pay too much, but it was a cash crop. Money was scarce.
So in these log barns, did you feed the cattle from the hay that you kept in them?
Well, they let the cows dry up in the wintertime. They'd feed them oat straw or pea straw just so they'd survive till spring. They didn't waste the hay on. I recall when they put up our log barn that one of the fellows struck the inside of his knee with a broad axe, and of course he was going to bleed to death. And it is 12 miles to Algoma to the nearest doctor with a horse and buggy, you'd never make it. Yeah. So my dad is always full of old-time remedies, and he told the men to go and gather all the cobwebs that they could in the frame barn, which they did, and they put it on that deep gash.
And that stopped the bleeding?
And that stopped the bleeding. Today they tell you, if you did anything like that, got near a dusty old spider web, put it on a cut, that you were going you'd die today. They'd say you're going to die of blood poison. But them days, they didn't have it.
Yeah, you had to do anything you could to save his life. Huh.
Same thing with a fever, you know. My Uncle Henry had, I don't know what fever it was, but they wrapped his feet with crushed onions. Big dishpans full of onions, they wrapped his feet in it. All they had to be careful of is that the air didn't get at his feet, that the bandages, he wouldn't kick around and the bandages get loose. If that happened, he would have a swelled foot, which he did.
What happened
to temperature, you know, and one of his ankles was quite large. The air struck it while the onions were doing their duty.
Yeah, what were the onions supposed to take down the swelling or disinfect it?
Well,
those
were supposed to get him rid of the fever. That's what it was intended for.
Oh, I see.
But air shouldn't strike it while the onions are doing their work.
Yeah. Could you explain some of the other buildings, like the frame barn? What was that used for?
That was used for hay and for bundles of grain, you know. You hauled all your bundles in. You didn't thrash off the field then like you do now. Some of the crops that you didn't have much of, I've seen my father thrash with a flail. You know what a flail is? It's like a fork handle. And it had another piece of wood about that long, tied with a piece of buckskin. And then you swing that in the air and hit it down and thrash the grain that way.
Huh. Would that be while the grain was still in the fields, or would that be in the barn?
No, you put that on the thrash floor, where it was a small crop, you know, that you want to save. such as clover seed or peas, if you didn't grow many peas.
Now, was thrashing to separate the grain from the stalk?
Yeah, that was to thrash it. Then I remember the thrash machine that pulled in our yard, and the separator was powered by horsepower. There'd be around four teams of horses going around a circle to make that horsepower go with a drive shaft that would drive the separator. Then I remember the thrash machine pulled in our yard, pulled by horses, and the engine was steam engine was pulled with horses. Then I remember when the steam engine came along and was would pull the separator.
Wow.
Then I remember the gasoline engine that pulled the separator and thrashed.
Boy, that's quite a parade of new inventions.
Yes. And now it's the combine. Now they just cut it and it's thrashed, right? Yeah. The combine cuts it and thrashes it and puts it in a hopper, and a truck goes by and they pull the string and the grain goes in the truck and away they go.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all push button nowadays. No wonder they can work in town all day and run a farm besides. It's all push button.
Where did you keep your vegetables, like during the winter? Did you have a
special? Well, nobody had furnaces. There was no such thing as a furnace. The first furnace I saw was at John Enns at Denmark, where I worked for Enns Brothers, and I boarded and roomed with John and his wife for 7 years. And they had the first furnace in Denmark. That's the first furnace I saw. And they didn't even know how to install them. They thought the furnace would, you just put wood in there or coal and it would push up the heat. But it didn't do that. You had to have cold air returns. To return the cold air, which you have in your houses now, cold air returns that sucks the cold air from the floor and pulls it down to the bottom of the furnace. Then it comes up through the furnace. The ice was froze every morning in our wash bowl at Enns's. In the wash bowl, and you run water and freeze it there every morning. Furnace wasn't much good. But what did you ask me about?
I asked you about where you kept them, your vegetables, like during the winter.
Oh, you kept everything. You had no furnaces, therefore you had ground floor in all the basements, and you could keep your potatoes till next May when you planted them again.
Just right on the ground.
And you also kept cabbage there. Carrots you put in sand. They didn't grow celery for the celery stalks. They grew celery for the celery roots.
Oh, and they didn't use the stalks at all?
You can buy those in the stores now, celery roots. They're ugly looking things. They peel those and they dice them. The Belgians are great for combining vegetables. As soon as our peas were fit in the garden, my mother would boil potatoes and shell peas from the garden. And she'd have a brown butter and milk and pour that over the potatoes and peas. Then the next was potatoes and beans, but the gravy was different. It'd be some fat, pork fat, and some onions and hot water. And then would be cabbage and potatoes. They call that jut.
Oh, yeah.
And then after that would be celery root and potatoes, but I don't remember the gravy on that.
Oh.
There was always potatoes and a vegetable, and they were always mixed.
And you had each of that in succession throughout the summer?
Yeah, well, as it got, as it was fit to eat from the garden. That's all you had to rely on is that garden and what you could salvage over winter. And as for fruit, well, we kids would have to go out in the hay fields and in the woods and pick wild strawberries, and they're small.
Oh, there.
So we didn't have preserves very often, only when we had company. My mother opened up a quart of wild strawberries or wild raspberries or blackberries or no, not currants, but
gooseberries.
Gooseberries, yeah. And dried apples, of course. We'd always peel apples and dice them, slice them, and put them on a bed sheet in the sun, and cover them with a mosquito bar so the flies wouldn't get at them. So we'd have pillowcases full of dried apples for the wintertime.
And did you just eat those raw, or did you make things out of them?
Oh, it makes applesauce out of them. Use that for applesauce and for pie for Kermis. And well, they use some fresh apples for Kermis, too, because our Kermis and Rosaire was in September, and by that time we had apples.
Really? Could you explain the log peeling form of lighting, where you said that they had a spiral?
Oh, they take a piece of cedar, about a 4 foot long piece of cedar, and about 3-4 inches in diameter. With a sharp knife, they would keep peeling like they could peel an apple, and it would make a long peeling. And then they'd tack it to a stick on top of the stove and light the bottom part, and it would crawl up the lighted part and crawl up that peeling.
Yeah, and that would that give very much light
at all? As much as a kerosene lamp.
Yeah, huh.
And then after that came tallow. When they kill a cow, they'd be out of tallow. Yeah. They make candles. And after that, with those kerosene lamps.
Did you tell me about how the first people using kerosene felt about it?
That is my wife's grandparents. He bought a kerosene lamp in Manitowoc, and when he came home, he wanted to show them how to operate it, you know, so he wanted to light it, so he got all of them out of the house so that it wouldn't blow them all to bits.
Could you tell me a little bit about the old-time stoves and how they were used?
Well, I don't remember real old. I remember my grandma's stoves. They were a little simpler than what they were when I was married in 1916. My stove is still in use by my brother-in-law out of Denmark. And instead of a coal stove, he still has a wood stove for a heater in the living room.
Could you tell about the cooking on top of here?
The cooking stove, it burned wood, of course. But in later years, you could burn coal in them, but that didn't work too well. But it had an ash pan, an ash pit in the bottom, and it had an oven, and mine had a tank in the back part. In that way, they didn't waste any heat, fuel to heat the water. They always had hot water in the tank in the back of the stove. Then you have your warming oven up above. Stuff you wanted to keep warm, you put it in that warming oven. And it had 6 lids on. Of course, the first ones came out and they were cast iron, and you couldn't polish them. You had to use stove polish. But when I bought mine in 1916, they had steel tops, and you just take a little most women used to take the fat that would accumulate around the dishpan on their dish rag and mop up the top, and it would shine. It was polished steel top.
Yeah.
Oh, that is quite a stove. And my heater was a hard coal stove heater. It dumped the coal on the top, and it would feed automatically. They were nice. They were all isinglass around the top. You could see that burning in there. It was nice. And that is 1916. Things have advanced awful fast. We didn't have electric lights either. When my first wife got TB, and she couldn't stand the kerosene lights, so I put in gas lights in my landlord's house. He allowed me to do that.
Yeah.
Still didn't have electric lights, so they're not so new, you know. Of course, they're new. They're not new for you. You never knew anything else.
No, I didn't.
Kids don't know much. You know how hard it was. You had to make out, and you had so little to make out with.
Yeah.
Boy, when we moved to Green Bay, my dad worked for Chemnitz Furniture Factory. That stood where the Northwest Engineering stands today, and he got $1.25 a day. That's for 10 hours.
Wow.
6 days a week. Then he was offered a job at Murphy's Sawmill, which stood at the mouth of the bay here, big sawmill. There he got $1.50 a day for 10 hours. And I was making $4 in the candy factory, $4 a week.
Yeah.
But at that time you could go, you didn't have to hire out. You could go in June, you could as soon as school was out, our bunch of kids, my folks' bunch of kids rather, all went picking peas for Larson Canning Company. That time again, you didn't have any viners. Now they thrash them right on the field and vine them, and the truck pulls out and they pull the string and the hopper lets them go in the truck now.
Yeah.
That's an invention of this fellow in Kewaunee.
Oh.
Huh. And at that time, you got there early. We had to get up. We were still sleeping, I guess, when we got up, and we had to go to the corner, a certain corner, to meet the truck. It wasn't a gasoline truck either. It was Bill Berman, the Jewish fellow, who had a team of horses. And he had, they called him a bus, but you were right out in the open. A bunch of kids sat on the outside board and a bunch of kids on the inside board, and there was two sides like that, and there was two outside boards and two inside boards. You threw all your basket and your lunch in the center, and you sat there with your legs dangling till they take you way out the country to go and pick peas.
How much did you get a day?
Then you had to pull the vines out of the ground and pull the pods off into a half bushel basket, and you got 15 cents a bushel.
Oh, I see.
No kid today would pick a bushel for $5.
Probably not.
But we used to, sometimes when they were good sugar peas, we would fill a ticket, $4.50.
In one day?
Four of us. There was four of us kids.
Oh.
But that was good. That got enough money together to buy our school clothes and our school books for the coming year for the six of us kids.